Session number 12246, Lieutenant Colonel W. Waitman, Reel 24.
Colonel W. A. Waitman, Reel 24. Have you any other additional recollections of Aldershot, Colonel?
Yes, the years 1947-48 at Aldershot were very, very interesting and remained clear in my memory. Some personal and some regimental and obviously military. The first personal recollection was that in the February of 1947, my second brother, Wesley Waitman, and I agreed that we would buy the old Burden farm between us, which was being offered for sale with vacant possession from my late father's estate. I spoke on the telephone with my mother, who informed me that he definitely bought it between us. And when I got home the following weekend, he welched on me and said that he was buying it between him and his wife. Nevertheless, that month I became engaged to the young lady who I'd known in school days at Durham, Miss Margaret Louise Craven, known affectionately in the family as Louie, from Whitley Bay, who was a school teacher at Biker, Newcastle. Around about the same time, a German prisoner of war, Kurt Bates, of the Luftwaffe, who'd been NCO aircrew in Heinkels, and then transferred to the Luftwaffe artillery regiment, which was both anti-tank and anti-aircraft, light anti-aircraft weapons, combining flak and pack. That is to say, Fliegerabwehr cannon and Panzerabwehr cannon, who had been taken prisoner in the desert campaign, finally put in the bag in Tunisia. After a spell in England and then America, had been returned to this country, and the cavalry barracks at Aldershot at that time was full of German POWs. The mess corporal, Corporal Russell, came to me one Sunday tea time and said that Kurt was very upset about something, and when I asked him why, Corporal Russell said that because a particular film was very popular, the German POWs were allowed out at Aldershot quite freely at this time, weren't allowed to go. So I told Mr. Bates that I would take him to the film and get him into the cinema. He said that it would get me into trouble, and I just indicated the five campaign ribbons on my chest and said I didn't get those buggers in Aldershot. Anyway, we became firm friends, and I'm jolly pleased to say that we're still in contact to this day. We've met up three times in the 1980s.
So prisoner of war was still with us in 1947?
Oh, yes. Some didn't get back till 48. And the cavalry barracks opposite Talavera and the other barracks between the centre of Aldershot and St George's Church was full of Germans who ran their own show but were supervised, of course, by the British Army. I'd planned to, by interested partnership, the proposed planned and agreed partnership in the old Burden farm was purely as a sort of an alternative career should I ever decide to leave the army. Sadly, in about the June of 1947, my fiancée Louis wrote to me to say that she didn't want to travel around the world as service personnel were wont to do by virtue of their calling, and I could see that things were beginning to lose the temperature was beginning to drop. And I attributed this, in retrospect, to the fact that there was another school teacher in the school, a female, who'd had to travel around the world with her father, who was probably not been commissioned originally, and pre-war had a fairly old hard scrat in military stations and barracks and cantonments. And finally, in the August-September of that year, she asked me how much a service officer got paid. At that time, the lieutenant got 15 shillings. I'd been a lieutenant for 2 years, so it was 19 shillings. Half a crown, 2 and 6 pence in the old money, parachute pay, and under 25, half the marriage allowance. So I reckoned that I'd be getting about 10 quid a week. And she mocked this and said that that's what she got as a school teacher. The final straw was when, in the course of our last conversation, she said the war meant nothing to her. So, within 2 years of the whistle going, some people at least, I'm happy to say a minority, their attitudes are beginning to change. That is a very small minority, but it was a blessing in disguise, and she called the engagement off in the September. However, on a happier note, I had enjoyed a very good summer playing cricket and actually being skipper of the Parachute Regiment Training and Holding Battalion Cricket 11, and we reached the semi-final of the Aldershot District Cup. I used to open the batting myself with a private Ken Suttle, who later went on and, after playing for Worthing in Sussex, played for the remainder of his life for the Sussex County side and got one tour for England against the West Indies in the early 1950s under Len Hutton. And I met up with Ken by arrangement when he came out for a drink with my wife and I when the Sussex were playing Yorkshire at Hull in the early 1950s. Also of interest, while I was at Aldershot, on a personal note, I was friendly with a family famous in the motorcycling world, the Archer family of Aldershot. Three generations rode in TTs in the Isle of Man. Old Mr. Archer, old Les, and his son, young Les. And old Les and young Les retired now from the Aldershot and Farnham area, sold their garages up and are now in Spain. But I met their younger brother when we were at Cambert Longmoor in 1985. And his older sister, the former Thelma Archer, who set up two records at Brooklands on motorcycles. All in all, I found the area very, very congenial. I attended Aldershot Horse Show in 1947 and 48, and little village shows. After my spell at the Airborne Depot with Pre-Parachute Company, at the end of 1947, I moved over at the beginning of 1948 as an instructor at the Airborne Forces Parachute Regiment NCO School, and was coincidental weapon training officer at the Parachute Regiment Training Centre, of which the NCO school was part. But sadly again, further cutbacks in airborne forces. Having lost three regular battalions in the training and holding in 1947, we were to lose three more regular and the training centre in 1948. So, by August of 1948, the training centre closed and about 45 of us were redundant and returned to our infantry regiments, which really was annoying to us, because whilst we were being made redundant, they were still taking officers through pre-parachute company to go on to RAF Upper Heyford for the parachute course. And as I'd only done 2 years in the parachute regiment, seconded from the Dolomite Infantry, I was very cross indeed. My posting was to the Light Infantry Brigade Training Battalion at Borden in Hampshire, then based around the 1st Battalion of the Somerset Light Infantry. They were a very, very classy county regiment, and the Assistant Adjutant, Lieutenant Peter Bush, was the cricket captain. So he welcomed me to the side, and I might say that they hadn't won a match that season, but when I joined them in the August, we went on to 6 wins and a very close draw, which I'd played a considerable part. However, one amusing occasion comes to me when I was trying to bowl far too fast and got hammered all over the ground at Borden. But we had some very good matches against service units nearby and village cricket. Peter Bush later went on to become Major General Peter Bush, and is one of the few officers of general rank to do so without having passed through the Staff College. I hope I'll run into General Peter at some future date. I had an interesting crossing of the paths almost this summer at camp at Folkestone. A light infantry officer, Captain Richard Waite, asked me which of the light infantry regiments I was from, and when I said DLI, he said that his father had been in the DLI, and I said, well, I served at Borden with your father, Robert Waite, and I gather that Colonel Robert Waite is now retired at Chitton. I sent my regards to him, and the reply came back, ask Bill if he remembers the Windmill Theatre in London, because I was a stage door Johnny at that time, being friendly with half a dozen windmill girls or more. I said just now how annoyed I was at having to leave the airborne forces, and what with events in India, Burma, the Empire being ceded away on independence, as events proved, probably the right decisions in the long run. In Palestine, the situation there where our forces were being attacked and murdered by Jewish terrorists, and then the giving up of the mandate in 1948, I felt that politically we were in the wrong hands. And whilst Clausewitz defined war as politics carried on by other means, I define politics as war carried on by other means, and was very disillusioned indeed. I considered, rightly or wrongly, that a lot of good men and women had died on air, land and sea, very little in return. I therefore put in my resignation, undertaking to join the TA, and I left the army on the 30th of November 1948. When I went to Brandsford Castle, the DLI depot, to hand over my identity card, I was pleased to meet again Lieutenant, as he then was, John Arnott, who had joined us in Malaya. At that time, John was just putting in an appeal against having been turned down by the Regular Commissions Board. I was jolly pleased to say that in later years, not only did he get his regular commission, but he got a good MC in Borneo, and was Lieutenant Colonel, and eventually the Light Infantry Colonel North, and actually Secretary of the DLI at Elvet, Waterside, Durham, the Deputy Lieutenant of the County. We had a short conversation on the phone not long before his died, before he passed on. I'm rather pleased that I didn't actually see him in his closing years, but very good memories of John as a young subaltern in the 2nd Battalion in Malaya. I then went as a student on farming at Thirsk as a farm pupil under the late Lawrence Barker, a large British Friesian breeder at Rybeck and Sutton Road Farms in Thirsk. At this time I hadn't heard anything from the War Office about my transfer to 17th Parachute Battalion, 9th Dynamite Infantry TA. So when I was on a weekend, I went along to Burt Terrace, the old 9th Battalion DLI headquarters at Gateshead, and inquired as to my joining that battalion. They knew nothing about me, and I had to start all over again by submitting forms. A very snotty, misery-gutted adjutant, Bob Woodman, said, of course you'll have to be interviewed by Colonel Sir Thomas Bradford, our honorary colonel. I said, all right. I didn't disclose the fact that I knew Sir Thomas personally. However, Colonel Birbeck, Tiny Birbeck, told me to take over B Company, which they called Stockton, but it was actually in the TA Centre at Norton. And I took over B Company, and twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'd commute by train when we got the work done, the milking or whatever farm task we were on with, to Stockton, and then the bus to Norton, and the return journey. Once the last train only stopped at North Allerton, so I just hoofed the 10 miles in the pleasant spring evening between Northallerton and Thirsk. The farm work was hard, and having been para in 14th Army before that, it was water off a duck's back. I learned retrospectively that they gave me every job going in the first fortnight to try to break me, but better men have tried before and since and failed.
Where were the men coming from in 17th Para?
The boys of B Company were drawn from Billingham, Stockton and Middlesbrough, and they were mainly ex-wartime paras. But we were beginning to take people in from infantry regiments, and they went down to Upper Hayford for the basic parachute course, taking a fortnight off work. And that fortnight, of course, was counted in lieu of annual camp. The permanent staff instructors at that time used to travel by train from Gateshead to Norton. But eventually, we got, in 1950, Company Sergeant Major Armstrong, who was given a married quarter at the end of the TA centre, or drill hall as we called it then. We shared the drill hall with a heavy anti-aircraft regiment of the Royal Artillery under a Lieutenant Colonel. And there were smaller subunits within the building, Army Cadet Force, and I don't think the military police had infiltrated at that stage, but we were very heavily populated by the Royal Artillery, both mixed formation of male and female gunners, and one or two good looking female gunners amongst them too, I might add. Whilst in the course of general farming there for the 6 month period, the veterinary practice was, the senior partner was a Mr. Duddle Sinclair, and one of the other partners was Mr. J.A. White, W-I-G-H-T. And subsequently, in the 1950s and 60s, 70s, I was quite convinced that James Herriot would be Alf White. In 1974-5, I think it would be 75, when they made the film It Shouldn't Happen to a Vet at Richmond, our youngest daughter, Vanessa, was secretary of the film company and said, "You're quite right, Dad. James Herriot is Alf White," and I was pleased to look him up in another context a couple of years ago. Our first annual camp with 17 Parabattalion 9 DLI was at Rolleston, near Hornsey in the East Riding of Yorkshire, and all companies went by road. Headquarter company, as I said earlier, was at Battalion Headquarters, Headquarter Company at Burt Terrace, Gateshead. And we had a company at Fenham, and a company at Felling, and my B company at Norton. Later years, they had a detached platoon from Gateshead up at Consett, and raised another company, D company for para, at Hartlepool, but that was after my time. Camp at Rolleston, we were in camp with the 18th Battalion from Birmingham, and they were commanded by Colonel Stuart Carter, who later went on to command the Trucial Oman Scouts, a great hunting and sporting character too. And the other battalion was the 12th Yorkshire Battalion, which covered mainly the West Riding of the Yorkshire, at that time in the Leeds Pudsey area particularly. So it was a brigade camp. The weather was good, in fact too hot, so we didn't get any ballooning in because of lightning risk. But some good exercise and good training, albeit a tented camp. And Hornsey was just a short walk away along the cliff top for a bit of social life at the Marine Hotel. In 1950, our annual camp was at Low North Camp, Filingdale Moor. Now, the Filingdale Moor had been used for field firing and artillery firing and battle school training during the Second World War and was littered with debris from major exercises and training carried out. But it was a very good training area, and Sergeant Major Armstrong joined us just after that camp. My CQMS at the time, 1949-50, was Colour Sergeant Harry Wright, who was an Arnhem veteran. And after camp in 1950, he emigrated to South Africa, but telephoned me 6 or 7 years ago when he's back from South Africa. We met at the 40th anniversary dinner of the Teesside branch of the Parachute Regiment Association 2 years ago, after a gap of some 38 years. I had some outstanding soldiers, Sergeant McKenzie, who was ex-6th Airborne Div, I think 12th Parachute Battalion, and I was referee for him to go along to the Malayan Police, and he went there to command one of the jungle squads during the Malayan emergency. Corporal Mark Owens, who had been with 6th Airborne Division in Palestine, came from a very tough Stockton fighting family, and he was one of the guests at my wedding at the end of December 1950. And a Pole, Corporal Tony Pantala, who was a tailor in Stockton, and I met up with him again when he was a flight sergeant in the physical fitness branch of the Royal Air Force at Nicosia in the late 50s. Sergeant Alan Pragnell, who followed CQMS Harry Wright as my CQMS, he and I are still in touch right up to this last weekend, yesterday in fact, at Wathkill Rangers. When he left B Company 17 Para, he went on to the Army Cadet Force and is retained in an honorary capacity as an honorary captain by Cleveland Army Cadet Force to run their mess. And 7 years ago, he was mayor of Stockton, and we met at the RF Catterick reception. And like John Armstrong and I, Alan Pragnell and I have met on and off and kept in touch for 40 years or more. This year, I'm pleased to say, his wife, Councillor Mrs. Gladys Pragnell, is mayor of Stockton. And yesterday he gave me four very good photographs of the function we attended on Mayor's Sunday in Stockton in June. I missed annual camp in 1951, which was at Penhale, or in fact at RAF Chivener in Devon in 1951, because I was very busy farming. In 1949, a British Friesian bull, which I had bred from a cow bought at my late father's dispersal sale, and which I had named Stow Troop after the Royal Netherlands Army Stow Troop Regiment, which I had trained in jungle warfare at Port Dixon, Malaya, and Dusan Tur near Kuala Lumpur. He was a male champion at Ayr, and I took him to Blackpool Royal Lancashire Show in the August of 1949, and he was the male champion there. In 1950, when we were at camp at Filingdale, I was unable to go to the Royal Lancashire Show, but he won the male championship again, the Renshaw Trophy. Having missed camp in 1951, I deemed it that I should make sure I attended in 1952, and I was commuting on occasions from the East Riding, where we were living, up to Stockton, which was a long old flog. But we were due to split the camp in 1952 between Stubbs Camp Howick and a composite battalion dropping into Germany in support of a division crossing the Rhine on Exercise Spearhead 1. We duly reported at Norton and then on to Gateshead and then by train to Howick. The following day, by truck back down to RF Topcliffe, did a practice parachute drop at Skipton-on-Swale, back up to Stubbs Camp the next day, milled around on the moors, and the following Saturday, back down to Topcliffe. So a typical army of the time, who were going up and down like yo-yos. But fortunately, the 16th Airborne TA Division Commander, General Bourne, who had borrowed flying boxcars, the Fairchild C-119, from the Americans and used them at Chivener in 1951, managed to get 14 of them for our composite battalion drop into Germany. So on the second Sunday of camp, we left Topcliffe and then spent 2 hours orbiting over Dusseldorf while the formation caught up with each other, and then we did a formation drop on the village of Empel near Wesel in Kreis Ries of the Niederrhein, the Lower Rhine. We landed uneventfully, except for the number one port of my aircraft, who was the umpire, Major Tubby Younghusband of the Royal Artillery tier gunners, and Tubby gallantly galloped to the RV and then obviously hospitalised. Amusing story. The number three starboard, as CQS Pragnell ran past him, the soldier said, "I think I've broken my leg colour." Pragnell replied, "Never mind about your leg, give me your rations." Collected them and then sped onto the RV. We captured our first objective, which was a brickworks, and during a lull I got on talking to the German family, the owner, Herr Ludwig Kuhnen, and his wife, two sons, and they trotted out some wine to slake our thirst, which was much appreciated, not having actually been asked for. And then we bashed on into the night, and four busy days followed, fighting with British infantry units along the banks of the Lower Rhine. I wrote to thank the Kuhnens afterwards, and the son, Theo Kuhnen, very kindly sent me the book Rommel by Brigadier Desmond Young, the German version, which I still keep to this day and treasure greatly. We flew staged through Mönchengladbach, and I asked the German receptionist at the officers' club how much a doll would cost for our daughter. At that time, we only had our eldest daughter, Caroline. And she said, "If you give me £1, I'll see that you get a doll back in England." I said, "Will that include the postage?" She said, "Yes, quite all right." So I gave Gisela Ziger my quidlet. In the course of conversation, she said she'd had two brothers killed on the Eastern Front. As we moved by transport through Bad Oeynhausen, I saw a toy shop, halted the vehicle, jumped out, and there was a doll in the window at 24 Deutschmarks. I asked him how much he wanted in English money. I had a greenback in my hand, and he took it and said, "This will do fine. It's a long time since I've seen this money." So the exchange rate at that time was in excess of 24 Deutschmarks to the pound, and we're rather in dire straits. At this time, it makes one wonder again who won the war, the Kriegers or Krauts or Germans or the Nips or Japanese. We drew and fit parachutes at RAF Buckeberg, and then our aircraft took off for the flight back to Topcliffe at 10-minute intervals. We were over RAF Waddington in Lincolnshire, and I was looking ahead through the crew compartment, and the Vale of York was just a black wall of cloud, rain cloud, and the green sunny countryside around it highlighted this black wall, and the pilot knew we were not going to get through it to Topcliffe. So we then swung somewhat left-handed. From Waddington down below, I could see the B-29s that the RAF had got on loan or some form of deal with the Americans and put RAF markings on them and called them Washingtons, as opposed to B-29 Super Fortress. And then we went into cloud and were bucking around quite a bit over the Pennines. And the pilot kept calling up various stations as to what the conditions were like to get in. And my main concern was that the doll that I'd bought in Buckeberg didn't fall off the rack where I'd put it. Eventually, we got down in Lancashire at the American base at Burton Wood. They fed us well, so much so that the Geordies couldn't eat all the meat that were piled on their trays. And then got the train up to Carlisle, and then from Carlisle to Howick, and got back just in time to break up camp and return to our respective drill halls, Norton in my case, and then back home to the East Riding of Yorkshire. I'm also pleased to say that the second doll duly arrived from Gisela Ziger and she wrote to say that she was getting married and she and her husband became manageress of one of the headquarters messes at Bad Oeynhausen in British Army of the Rhine. We kept the second doll for later on, giving Caroline the first one that I'd brought back by flying boxcar.